To reach the state pertaining to mind is what the mind creates, the following five conditions are necessary. First, we must know the essence of mind. This has to do with one's discernment. The mind of each and every one of us is in essence the same as that of the Buddha's, which is absolutely pure. This is the original quality of the essence of our mind. To seek for the Buddha apart from this essence is bound to be fruitless. Second, we must know the function of mind. That is to say, we have to know that the essence of mind does entail functionality. When the mind is in quiescence, it will be in constant awareness and illumination. This is the function of mind. However, should there be any agitation or turbulence of mind, delusive thoughts will surface, and there could hardly be any awareness or illumination. It is only when quiescence of mind is maintained that its function would take effect to transform defilements into the true suchness of Buddha nature, thus turning afflictions into Bodhi. Third, we must maintain constant awareness. There needs to be constant awareness and illumination. What is the Dharma realm of a Buddha? It is the one absolute reality. If we can perceive this one absolute reality, the world of our body and mind would be consonant with absolute reality. Being consonant with absolute reality is permanent illumination. Fourth, we need to contemplate on the quiescence and emptiness of the body, a state when there is no ideation of self, other, beings, and soul. When these ideations are gone, our body and mind, as well as all delusive thoughts, would be in a state of emptiness and quiescence. Fifth, we need to stay put on one. This has to do with methodology, and the method is to focus on one single object or target. Once you move from the target, it is difficult to enable one act for samadhi, the state of one-pointed focus in mindfulness that is free from any turbulence. Whether it be dynamic or static, staying put on one would enable us to see Buddha nature and enter samadhi. The actual content of Chan's mindfulness of the Buddha is consisted in the one act for samadhi as taught by the fourth patriarch Daishin, which is demonstrative of the patriarch's own level of competence in Chan practice. The second question to bring up is, What was the discernment of Chan Master Daishin himself as far as the Chan of being mindful of the Buddha is concerned? Perhaps the discernment of Daishin as derived from the practice can be summed up in the following sentence. All things do not exceed a square inch. It is noted that the master used the graphic description of square inch to demonstrate the mind, not really referring to the material or spatial aspect of mind. It aptly portrays the necessary state of mind for the practice, allowing one to stay focused on a single point in order to enter the state of samadhi. Apart from the fifth patriarch, Hongren, Master Daishin had other disciples, one of whom was Farong, who later founded the Nitu sect that issued several great Chan masters. Master Daishin's teaching for Farong, when he first received into his tutelage, was this: myriad methods converge on a single inch, and wondrous virtues, as many as the grains of sand in the river, rest within the source of mind. Everything within the scope of precepts, meditative concentration, and wisdom, as well as supernormal powers and transformations, are completely and inherently within your mind. This has to do with discernment. The mind is primordially sufficient and fully omniscient. It is, however, so obscured by delusive thoughts that not a spark of light is manifested. We do need to have such discernment, or else we would have wasted all our efforts in the practice. It is crucial that we acknowledge the presence of this treasure within us prior to our serious digging to find it. All methods for this endeavor dwell on that one spot where the mind is. There is no Buddha apart from the mind, and no mind apart from the Buddha. Hence, this mind is the Buddha. This mind creates the Buddha. It is also true that whatever virtues, be they the 32 marks and 80 wholesome characteristics of a magnificent being, the 10 powers, or the 4 intrepidities, etc., they are all within the source of mind. A point of entry for cultivating Chan is the three learnings of precepts, meditative concentration, and wisdom. All virtues are basically there within the square inch of our mind. Despite having all the virtues within us, we have to face the helplessness, struggle, and suffering of everyday life. Whether we are a monastic or lay practitioner of Chan, we would still have to deal with the afflictions of this world prior to enlightenment, all because we are unable to be our own master. Therefore, to emancipate ourselves from such helplessness and struggle, we would need to earnestly cultivate for perfect wisdom and liberation. In this connection, Master Daishin advised us not to discriminate in face of any circumstance and condition. Knowing that all wondrous virtues are there at the source of our mind, we need only confront our struggles with the one absolute reality that is devoid of discrimination, and then we will find everything as they are, free and at ease. All kinds of struggle and affliction come from the discriminating mind. Just ask yourself, what is this world that we are facing every day? It is not something solid and substantial. Rather, it is a framework constructed through our ideations. Our daily troubles and worries are not caused by externalities. Our vexations and afflictions arise from within us. For example, even when everyone is treating you all right, you may still harbor the thought that they dislike you because of their minor gestures or even a glance. These thoughts are creations of your mind brought about by discrimination. Anyone who can catch this point would agree that vexations are what you are looking for. Master Daishin said that what appears before our eyes is what we call the outside world. But they of our themselves are neither nice nor nasty. What is considered to be nice or nasty stems from the discriminating mind. If the mind does not put labels to things, how could delusive sentiments arise? By labeling externalities with names we construct, red, yellow, green, blue, fat, thin, etc., delusive sentiments and emotions follow. If only we could stop constructing, labeling, assuming, we would not be turned by the world of signs, languages, and ideations. In Buddhism, we call the world of language the world of name and speech. By naming and speaking, we are actually referring to concepts. We do not live in a solid world of things, but in a world of ideations. There was once a popular song called Follow Your Feelings. In reality, we are never able to directly follow our feelings, but only indirectly follow the world of ideations. We do not go along with the phenomena, but only the names, forms, and concepts that we attribute to them.